So, ladies and gentlemen, hello and welcome to the next lecture of the Introduction to Organizational Economics course. The topic today is task assignment, and to map this lecture on the to point this lecture on the big map of this course, we're still dealing with the schematic representation of organizations as a three-legged stool, and we're still describing the first of the three legs of the stool: decision rights and task assignment. Last lecture we were talking about decision rights. This lecture we'll be talking about task assignment. The two topics are related, as I hope you will see in this lecture. Now, so as I often do, I like to begin lectures on organizational economics with a motivational example, or maybe even a couple of motivational examples. Here's one example that I would like to give you today. Now, Deutsche Telekom. Everybody knows Deutsche Telekom. So it's one of the biggest firms in Germany, in Europe for that matter. Now, the example I want to give today concerns the organizational architecture at Deutsche Telekom. Namely, it concerns the evolution of the organizational architecture of Deutsche Telekom. And I'm going to argue in the rest of this lecture that this evolution is quite symptomatic of the different trade-offs that the choice of organizational architecture involves, and how this choice is affected by the change in economic circumstances. Now, quite a few years ago, the organizational structure of Deutsche Telekom looked like a four-pillar affair. So there were four divisions: the T-Com, the T-Online, T-Mobile, and T-Systems. And each of these divisions were responsible for a particular product. So as you can see, the T-Com was doing fixed line. Who knows about fixed line these days? The T-Online was providing services related to the internet subscriptions. T-Mobile was doing mobile phones, and T-Systems were doing the clever stuff for mostly business customers, namely the networks. Now, in the interim years between 2005 and 2010, they've reorganized themselves, so they moved from a four-division structure into three-division structure. So what they did is they joined the two services that that were catering mainly to private customers, namely the fixed line telephony, internet, and also television. So they basically merged the T-Com and T-Online into a division called T-Home. Now, of course, a few people lost their jobs, but who cares? The point is that this division tried to embrace quite a lot of services, quite a lot of different services that were offered mainly to private customers. There were a few business firms, but mainly these were the services to private customers. Now, at the same time, what we observe is a refocusing, maybe even a narrowing of the focus of the division called T-Systems onto providing for corporate customers. So corporate customers mostly are interested in firm-wide IT solutions, in firm-wide network solutions. But since then, there were other technologies that could be productively used, other technological solutions, for instance, cloud services or the Internet of Things was in its nascency back then, but still developing. And the T-Systems embraced that. So just like T-Home was for private customers, T-Systems was for corporate customers. You see the change in the organizational structure from the product, right? The previous organization was defined in terms of products that people that division sold to all sorts of customers. Now the organizational structure is refocused from the product type to the customer type. Now the end of this evolution from the product-based organization to customer-based organization took place after 2010, when the Deutsche Telekom adopted what's called the two-pillar strategy. And what you see is the further unification of services, a further grouping of services into two large groups, the private customers and the corporate customers. So this structure called T is basically a merge of the T-Home, which used to be T-Com and T-Online, with the T-Mobile. So all these services and employees and organizational units, all these individual ambitions, all these careers were grouped into a thing called T, which embraced the full spectrum of services offered to private customers. And T-Systems has remained T-Systems. There was a slight rebranding, as you can see, but T-Systems exclusively focused on corporate customers, and it has become bigger because it is since about 5-10 years ago that such things as cloud services and the Internet of Things, in particular the Smart Cities project, which Deutsche Telekom is doing, that really have gained prominence in our society, if you like. Does everybody know what Smart Cities is? The Smart Cities concept is an Internet of Things, right? So you can network everything and make connect basically objects of municipal infrastructure to big data servers in order to provide more efficient management of the infrastructure in real time. Very, very cool, sophisticated applications. You know what smart home is, right? You have an app on your mobile, so you can regulate the temperature in your house. You could see the video cameras installed in your house. You could register who has come in, what's going on around your house. So smart cities is basically the same idea, but at the municipal level. Now, but this is not really a lecture on big data. This is a lecture on organizational economics. And what you see here is a reorganization from product type divisional structure to customer focused divisional structure. Now, why was this reorganization? Some cynics would have it that it's because they wanted to cut some costs and they wanted to streamline their services. So yes, a few people did lose their jobs. But here's a press release. Here's the excerpt from the interview with René Obermann, who was then the chief executive officer of Deutsche Telekom. He retired in 2013. Back then, he was the chief executive officer, and he presided over much of the reorganization of the firm. So that's what he said. He said he wanted to move from product-centered business from product-centered business units to a concept called one company. Right, so of course they ended up having two companies, but it's the concept of one company is really about integrating all services that a particular type of customer may have required. So they integrated customer service for countries in which they operated a large segment of customer service. They unified research and development and networks because, well, that's where the largest investments were made, and because the products and services provided by research and development department and the networks department were mainly catered towards corporate customers. So there would be a lot of synergies, a lot of mutual learning and productive information exchange if these two departments, which were previously in separate organizational units, if these two departments were integrated into one. Then, it's not only about positive synergies and getting like-minded people together, it's really about customer-oriented cooperation. All units with international economies of scale have been organized in international business units. All units that required geographic closeness were given local responsibilities. However, what did happen is that, you know, they no longer distinguish by products, they distinguish by customer type, and that's what you see. That's what you see in the end. And the question for us really is, and we will try to answer this question in the course of this lecture. The question for us is, why this change in organizational architecture? You know, is it just because people want to cut costs, or are there further, perhaps strategic objectives behind reorganization that is constantly taking place in the business world. Deutsche Telekom is just one example. Now, it turns out that organizational architecture, in particular the task assignment aspect of organizational architecture, which is the topic of today's lecture, can actually make a difference to the bottom line. You know, you could earn more money or less money depending on how your organizational architecture is set in terms of which tasks are performed by which units. So here's another case which really illustrates the point I want to make. It's admittedly a case. It's not any sort of statistical analysis, but I think this case is pretty strong. Now, consider a firm called IBM Credit. It's a firm, but it is fully vertically integrated with IBM, right? It's wholly owned subsidiary of IBM. What they do? They do financial services, and they focus on providing credit to organizations mainly who buy things from IBM. IBM, back then, well, at the time that the case is talking about, IBM specialized on really expensive, complicated servers and hardware solutions for corporate customers. We would be talking about multi-million dollar systems of servers. Now IBM is making steps into developing software, but that's a different chapter in the history of this organization. Back then it was the hardware company. So if you buy a server or a network of servers, it's quite expensive. And for most of the customers, funds were needed to finance the purchase. And here is IBM Credit that acts as the provider of finance for the organizations who want to buy IBM products. It's just like, suppose you want to buy a car, you don't have enough money to buy a car, you go to BMW Bank that approves your application for car loan at the time when you sit in the car dealership and drink your coffee. So it's the same idea. Now, but what goes behind the scenes as you sit in the office and drink your coffee, waiting for the outcome of your loan application? Your data will have to be analyzed by IBM Credit employees, and your credit scores would have to be checked. All the documents that you supply in support of your application, your balance statements, your bank account statements, would need to be analyzed. A credit score would be produced, and based on the credit score information, a decision will be made as to whether or not to give you credit, and if yes, under which conditions. Basically, what is the interest rate that would be appropriate in dealing with your particular application. So this is the process that IBM Credit was largely responsible for. Now, how was the firm organized? There was a change. Before, the firm was organized in what's called a functional form. So there was a division of departments within the firm, division of tasks within the firm, that emphasized specialization on a particular part of the loan application process. So there were people who initially processed an application, basically entered the data from paper into the system. Then the digitized application form would be forwarded to the next department, who would then check the credit score, check basically the previous credit history of an organization and calculated the credit score. Then this information would be passed on to the next department that would review this and make a decision as to whether to give credit or not and under what conditions. Then the money would be sent to the bank account of the applicant. And then, since then, another department would monitor the performance of the loan, would make sure that the payments were made accurately and on time, and if there are problems with payments, they would send threatening letters admonishing the firms to make the payments. So this was the functional organization. And you know, it took 6 days on average. It took 6 days to process an average application for credit. 6 days. Now, it was too long. It was too long. So what they decided to do, they decided to reorganize. They decided to redefine their organizational architecture and move it from functional form to product form. So what happened is instead of each employee or each department dealing with a particular aspect of loan application, they assigned a particular employee or team of employees, if for complicated cases, to deal with all aspects of application. So now, instead of one person doing the data entry and another person doing the credit score and another person doing making the decision, it would be just one person or one organizational unit that would be dealing with data entry, credit score check, credit history check, credit score calculation, and loan decision making. So there would be a reassignment of tasks from moving from specialization on a particular part of the process towards overseeing the entire process from the beginning to the end, right? So it's a move from specialization to what we will later on learn in this lecture as the broader task assignment. Now, as a result of this reorganization, the time it took to process an average credit application went drastically down from 6 days to just 4 hours, which for the time that we're talking about, it's not yesterday, now you can get this in minutes, but at that time it was actually quite revolutionary. And you know, you had a lot more satisfied customers and a lot more custom for IBM credit and indirectly for IBM. So organizational architecture can make a huge difference to organizational performance. Therefore, it's important to consider the various options available to firms to organize themselves. And as often happens in organizational economics, each option, each solution has its advantages and disadvantages. So what we're going to try and do in this lecture is to learn the various possibilities to assign tasks. Basically, the grouping is somewhere between specialization and broad task assignment, plus some combinations along the spectrum. We will study the advantages and disadvantages of different task assignment solutions. Specialization is good for something but bad in other aspects. Broad task assignment can cut the application processing time, but it has its disadvantages also, as we will learn in this lecture. Now, later on, we will consider the organizational forms, the three major types of organizational forms that encapsulate the different ways of organizing tasks. The U form it corresponds to specialization, where a particular department is responsible for narrowly defined task. An M form is broader task assignment, and the matrix organization is a compromise between the two. So these are the three learning aims. We learn about specialization, broader task assignment. We will study the advantages and disadvantages of these forms of organizational architecture. And we will learn also about the organizational forms that you can observe in real firms today. Okay, now let's start with what's known as the classical problem of task assignment. So consider a firm that, Deutsche Telekom, right? It has two market segments. It has two customer groups. The individuals to whom it sells television services, fixed line, internet, mobiles, and it has also the corporate customer segment. The other firms to whom it sells smart city solutions, smart home solutions, network solutions, etc. Now, the services given to both customer groups involve two broad groups of tasks, which we can group under the heading sales and service. So by sales, we mean marketing and are making a deal with the buyer, defining the price, defining the particular product specification, and processing this deal. By service, we mean post-sale service. If you have any questions, if you have any issues with the solution that you have bought, if you have any problems, if you want to change your contract, that's the service task. Now, if you superimpose the task groups customer segments that the firm is catering for in the market, you will see the four segments of tasks. So this is the organizational unit, or a person or a group of people, doesn't matter, an organizational unit that deals with sales tasks for individuals. This is the unit that deals with sales tasks for businesses. They're two different units because of the specificity of sales tasks for individual and businesses. This is the unit that deals with service activities for individual for private customers. This is the department that deals with service tasks for business customers. Now, so these are these four departments, and each department, of course, has the boss. Each department has an office. Each department has a secretary. And now we think, as the shareholders of an organization, we think, can we save some money by maybe grouping the tasks into two departments? So let's have, instead of four departments, let's have two departments. So let us group the tasks along the activity dimension. So let's create a department that will deal with sales. This will be a department. So one of these guys will lose their position. So there will be one manager in the sales department, and let's create another department that we will call the service department. And the sales department will concentrate all the tasks related to sales. Never mind which type of customer you're talking about. The other department will take on all the responsibilities related to post-sales service. Now, this type of task assignment is called specialization. Now, why it's called specialization, I think it's clear intuitively. The idea here is that each of these two departments specializes, hence the term, specializes on a particular aspect of the production process within the firm, right? The production process includes both sales and service. Never mind, we divide it into two stages, the sales and service, and we charge the two different departments, who will then specialize one in sales and the other in service. So that's one big, broad group of options, group of organizational architecture solutions that emphasize specialization and narrow assignment of tasks to departments. Now, there is an alternative. There is an alternative, right? And the alternative to narrow task assignment through specialization is, unsurprisingly, what's known as broad task assignment. So here, we combine the four tasks into two departments. One department will deal with sales and services for private customers. The other department will deal with sales and services for corporate customers. It's just like the two-pillar strategy that Deutsche Telekom has chosen, right? So specialization versus broad task assignment. And the question is, which of these two forms to choose? Now, it turns out that there is no clear optimal organizational structure. It's not like every firm should have broad task assignment or every firm should specialize. You can find examples, like Deutsche Telekom, you could find examples of a broad task assignment, but you can also find examples, especially in the finance sector, and if we have time, I will give a couple of examples there. You have lots of examples of organizations that shape their architecture along the activity lines, thereby assigning tasks in a narrow sense to different departments. An example here is a typical bank or a typical finance, typical organization that provides financial services to customers. Imagine a bank. You come to a bank as a, let's say you're an institutional investor. You have a big pot of money, 1 billion euros, let's say, and you want financial advice about where to invest this money. So, what do you need? You need to hear the advice of investment analysts about which portfolios are giving which returns. And you know, and you then you need, and then you need an advice from the people who will actually make the investment on your behalf. So there is the research function, and there is also the practice function. There's also the practical management of investment function. Now, it's very important. It's actually one of the legal requirements in the financial sector that the financial research and financial management activities are separated and are carried out by different departments. Now, imagine if the same department or the same person will do research for you and will also do investment management for you. This creates unhealthy incentives for this person or this department to give you biased picture of the returns on investment by across different portfolios, so as to emphasize the attractive parts of the portfolios that this particular department is directly dealing with. In order to avoid this conflict of interest and potentially moral hazardous situation, these activities are by law separated. So there are organizations that do specialization, there are organizations that do broad task assignment. Let us look at the issue one needs to consider, organizations need to consider in order to choose the optimal configuration of task assignment, the optimal type of organization form for themselves. Now, advantages and disadvantages of specialization. And of course, the advantages of specialization are the disadvantages of broad task assignment. The disadvantages of specialization are the strong parts of the broad task assignment. So it's like a mirror image. The two are mirror image of each other. Now let's look at the advantages of specialization. And there are quite a few serious advantages of specialization. In fact, specialization was historically the first. If you look at the economic history over the last couple of centuries, specialization was historically the first organizational form that most firms adopted. And it was no coincidence. The big advantage of specialization, if there's one thing you need to know about the advantages of specialization, is that specialization allows you to exploit economies of scale. Now, the notion of economies of scale should be known to you by now, because we mentioned it in the market entry lecture. So economies of scale happen because the cost structure of the firm is such that it includes fixed costs, and therefore, if you produce more output, the share of fixed costs per unit of output will obviously go down, right? Therefore, there exists a term, the minimal efficiency scale, which basically tells you the amount of output that an organizational unit has to produce in order to minimize the costs per unit, right? So that's a microeconomic argument that we studied, I think, two lectures before or three lectures before. And it appears here. If you specialize on something, you can exploit economies of scale by concentrating on the activities that you can and know how to do, right? So you can also save on the cross training expenses, which is an important part of the HR budget within an organization. If you want people or departments if you want to assign broader ranges of tasks to particular people or departments, you have to train them to perform these tasks. Now, training is expensive, so if you do specialization, you save on the training costs because you don't need to train the same person or in various tasks. There are also an important element of costs which have to do with switching between different activities, right? You could perhaps sort of reflect on your personal experience thinking about the switching costs. If you have several projects that you're doing at the same time, right, each time you move from one project to another, you need to take some time in between to remember what you were doing in the other projects. So these switching costs between different activities, these are the costs in terms of time, these are the costs in terms of having to retrieve the necessary information to resume work on yet another project that you're doing simultaneously, are there. They do cost organizations time and money. And if you specialize, then you will minimize the possibility you will minimize the risks of having to bear significant costs of switching between different activities simply because there aren't so many activities that a particular organizational unit is responsible for. Okay, now a major advantage of specialization has to do with incentives. Now, incentives will be the topic that we will study in much greater detail in the next lecture. So if you don't understand something about incentives right now, you're welcome to always ask questions, but it's okay if you don't understand everything about incentives right now, because there will be a full lecture on incentives later on. Now, it turns out that the best organizational context in which you can practice strong performance-based incentives, the best organizational context in which you can practice performance-related bonuses, for instance, as one of the very popular forms of incentives, it turns out that this context is characterized by specialization. Why? If your organizational architecture emphasizes specialization, everybody is responsible for just a few tasks, ideally just one task. So if you want to practice incentive, all you need to do is you need to introduce an incentive pay based on your performance on a single or a very narrow range of tasks that you're responsible for. And that will allow you to concentrate fully on these tasks in order to maximize the chances of you getting an incentive. Now, unlike in the case of specialization, if you want to practice incentives and the task assignment in your organization is broad, that's probably not a very good idea. Why is it not a very good idea? Because it invites an important problem of multitasking that we will mention in the next lecture in greater detail. For now, it's just important to understand what multitasking in the context of incentives is. I know that there's a general term called multitasking, and we all multitask, like whether we like it or not. But in the context of incentive, multitasking refers to the situation in which people concentrate their activities on the tasks that are most rewarding for them. So if I'm an employee in the corporate customers department, and I am responsible for sales, and I'm also responsible for service, right? How do I allocate my task, my time? How do I allocate my time and effort between the sales activities and the service activities? The way I allocate my time between sales and service activities will be influenced by what I get in terms of my personal reward for the unit of effort that I spend on sales versus on service activities. And it turns out that most of the incentive schemes that are practiced today emphasize, perhaps unknowingly, but nevertheless, emphasize the sales aspects of activity. So everybody is interested in generating as high sales as possible, never mind the post-sales customer service. It doesn't matter. It's not very strongly incentivized. Now, if you think that customer service activities are going to be very important for the success of your organization, and yet there are no adequate incentives supporting excellent performance of your employees in the area of customer service, then maybe broad assignment of tasks is not a good idea, because everybody will try to sell like hell, but they will not be as hardworking when it comes to the customer service. And then you will have short-term surge in sales, quite a lot of sales generated, but then people will start complaining, and so people will start sending their questions and customer service requests, and you will simply not have enough capacity to address them all, which will in the end result to reputational losses. So going back to the advantages and disadvantages of specialization, specialization is the ideal organizational environment in which firms practice strong, powerful incentives. And broad task assignment is simply not suited for this business very well. Okay, so now, not all firms specialize. Some firms, like Deutsche Telekom, prefer broad task assignment. It means that broad task assignment has its advantages over specialization, and specialization has its disadvantages in relation to broad task assignment. So what are the disadvantages What are the disadvantages of specialization and by virtue of it, the advantages of broad task assignment? There are a couple of positions, and you can read much more about it in the textbook behind these slides. So the first disadvantage is referred to as foregone complementarities across tasks. What it means? Well, it mean, the complementarity in general means that the effort you spend on one task, the time and effort you spend on one task, is going to be beneficial for your productivity on the other task. Right? So you can think about positive complementarities in which it's the case. You can think about negative complementarities in which the opposite is the case. The more time you spend on one activity, the less productive you are in the other activity. Now, let's consider a very specific example of complementarities across tasks using the example of IBM credit that we mentioned earlier in the lecture as one of the motivational examples. So, why did it take so much time, 6 days on average, to process an average loan application when the organizational structure featured specialization? Because at the point when one department finished their work and the other department was to begin their work on the same application, each subsequent department would need to review the application and verify the data again, right? So if there are some questions about credit history or credit score that would need to be clarified by looking again on the initial data that had been supplied, if there are some questions from the decision-making department to the data entry department, these questions would have to be addressed and some sort of formal communication would have to take place. If there are some missing data, for instance, in the application form, and the decision-making department says, look, we can't make a decision without these data, let's send an email to the data entry department and say whether they had forgotten to enter these data, or these data were simply missing, and if these data were simply missing, let's ask the data entry department to send a letter to this customer asking them to supply this information. It all takes a lot of time, right? Now, so if you are the if you deal with applications and decision making as one department, then these two tasks will be complementary to each other in the following sense. If you are the one who does data entry and you see missing and you see some missing information in the application form at the very first point of application, you will react much more quickly and prompt the customer to enter the missing data because you know that this is going to be a problem later on. Right? So the more effort you spend on verifying the initial data, the more productive, the quicker you will be in the subsequent at the subsequent stages of the application process. And these complementarities between tasks are best achieved when the task assignment is broad. Why so? Well, look here. If you have narrow task assignment, if you have specialization, then I am, you know, if I am the data entry guy and you are the decision-making guy, right? Then you know, I really don't care. I look at the paper application and I see, okay, this data is missing. I'll then report not available. And I press entry and send my application off to you. I don't really care because my performance is judged and assessed and my task is to just enter the data. I specialize on this. I don't care that later on it will be difficult for you to make a decision. You will then contact me and I will have to, with pleasure, do my job again. But if I am the same, if I am the one who does both data entry and decision making, then I can save on these intermediate, on the time required to carry out these totally unproductive intermediate communications. So this is, I hope, an example which is concrete enough and you know, simple enough for you to make sense of what we actually mean by complementarities. Now, specialization has a disadvantage that whatever complementarities between tasks there are, they are likely to be underused or foregone because simply there are not sufficient incentives in place for the different departments to really talk to each other. Now, the second disadvantage of specialization is the considerable amount of coordination activities that a successful functioning of specialized organizational architecture requires. So, high coordination costs across different functions are the disadvantage of this specialization. I will tell a lot more about coordination and incentive design in the next couple of slides. So we will have an example showing what coordination is, and you will hopefully immediately see that coordination is more of a problem for organizational architecture that features specialization than it is for the organizational architecture that features broad task assignment. So let's talk about the coordination problem in general. Right? Everybody knows what coordination is. I hate coordination. When I hear coordination, I shrink. Right? So it's a very general organizational and management problem. And you can, you know, let us now try to sort of sublime our daily experiences connected to coordination into some general statement that we can make that would unite the various experiences of coordination. So what is the coordination problem? Coordination problem happens when there are two or more parties, that have different preferred action plans. So the different parties have different preferred action plans, right? But the positive outcome of their interaction depends on a particular combination of the actions that these different parties will take. I remember talking about driving on the right side of the road, left side of the road with a lady whom I don't see today. It was last week, we were talking about coordination already. So what I mean is, you know, back then I gave an example of, you know, trying to meet up with a friend in the city center, and you know that he likes blue cafe and you like the red cafe, and the question is, which cafe should you go to in the absence of a mobile phone? You will have a great evening if you meet wherever. It doesn't matter whether it's red cafe or blue cafe, right? But if you go to red cafe and if he goes to blue cafe or vice versa, then your evening will be less good because you will miscoordinate on your activities. The same example can be given in the case of driving on a particular side of the road. Driving on the right side of the road is no better than driving on the left side of the road as long as everyone else drives on the same side of the road. Okay? So, and if you are a Martian and you don't know whether you're in England or Germany, then really it's really a big problem because you don't know which side of the road to take in order to avoid a collision with the ongoing transport. So this is a coordination problem when there are two or more parties, each have their individual preferences, and it's not clear which decision they should make because the outcome of their interaction, the positive outcome of their interaction, can only be achieved if their actions are synchronous in some sense, if they all together take a particular course of action. Now, thinking about the coordination problem in general, it's instructive to describe the coordination problem in terms of game theory. So let's just do a coordination game. Every coordination game would have more than one Nash equilibria. And then the coordination problem, basically, mathematically speaking, stems from the fact that if a game has more than one Nash equilibrium, it's not clear which action a rational agent should take. Let me give you an example. So here's a firm developing a new product. Let's say, I don't know, a new motorcycle, as is the example in the textbook. And there are two options that can be designed for this particular product. So one option, option one, is the product that is really high technical quality, the top specs, best materials, best technology available. The most ergonomical aerodynamics are the best available, etc., etc. And if this option is taken, then it's the R&D department, the technical people who will get most of the bonus if the product is successful on the market. Now, here's also option two. And option two is preferred by the marketing department, not by the R&D department. Option two is to create an average product, nothing special, right? But market it in a way that would have the largest appeal to most of the to most of the people. So it's like a choice between a Ferrari type of product and an Opel type of product, right? So a Ferrari type of product is the best and excellent, but it's going to be very expensive, and it will have the appeal only to the niche of people who can afford it, right? Now, Opel is average, and but it's versatile, and it will have an appeal to a lot of customers. Now, which option do you take? R&D department prefers Ferrari, because then they can really show how good they are and get a lot of bonus if the sales are successful. Now, the marketing people will not necessarily want a Ferrari, because the marketing people want to show how important marketing is in the organization, and they will want to do their marketing activities the way they see best, and they will therefore prefer a product with a large appeal to as many customers as possible. Now, if these two departments simultaneously came up with their product plans, what will be the outcome for the organization as a whole? Let's study this problem using what we know about the game theory. So, here's the two players. They are organized, as you can see. Their task is specialized. The marketing department specializes in marketing. The R&D department specializes in R&D. This is the narrow task assignment case. Now, if both departments simultaneously work on option one, it's going to be a success. It's going to be great. They're going to, the firm as a whole is going to make a profit of 6 billion euros. Okay? Now, because option one features the technical side of the product, the R&D department will get most of the bonus. Everybody will applaud the technology of the product, and therefore the CEO will probably decide to give some extra cookies to the R&D department. So if both go for option one, it's a success. But it's more of a success for the R&D department. Okay. If both go for option two, it's also a success. And the profit is, let's say, for simplicity, exactly the same. 6 billion euros. But then, it's nothing special on the technology side. It's all marketing. So everybody will, in all the industry journals, in all these news reports and analytical reports, the marketing campaign of the product will be emphasized. And the CEO will therefore decide to give more bonus to the marketing department. The marketing department will prefer option two. The R&D department prefers option one. It's just like in my example, who likes blue cafe, who likes red cafe. The important thing is that they will come to the same cafe. But the preferences are different. And the question is, which action should you take? Now, if all take option one and all take option two, the outcomes are really great. If you miscoordinate, look here, if you miscoordinate, if R&D does its technical thing and the marketing does its marketing thing, then they will overspend, they will produce lots of Ferraris that they will try to mass market, nothing is going to happen, they're going to lose a lot of money, and you can see this. Equally, if they miscoordinate here, in the sense that the R&D will just deliver the average spec and the marketing will also take it easy, then it's another failure, and that's another sort of possibility to miscoordinate. Now, let's solve this game. Let's work out the Nash equilibrium using the technique that we already know from the lectures and tutorials. We basically determine the best course of action for each side and finds the cells that contain the best course of action for both sides. And we will see very quickly that this game has two Nash equilibria. Two Nash equilibria. Option one, and option two. There are two Nash equilibria, right? And all of these are Nash equilibria. The question is, which action should you take? Suppose you are R&D department, which action should you take? It's not clear. It's not clear at all. And it's very likely that the marketing department and R&D department will miscoordinate, and that will result in a failure, not only for these individual departments, but for the organization as a whole. Of course, you could say, you're trying to make a problem when it doesn't exist. All it takes is for the marketing department to give a call to the R&D department or vice versa and say, guys, what are you up to? And they will say, oh, we like option one. And then the marketing department will say, oh, great, okay, then we'll go for option one as well. But that is what is coordination. That is what coordination is. And it's not that easy. It's not that easy. You know, imagine your marketing department. You call the R&D department and the, you know, be sure the R&D department will tell you, option one is really cool, let's go for it. What would you do? You like option two, say, no, guys, look, let's do option two. It's really, really excellent. You know, everybody does marketing. Nobody cares about your Ferrari product, right? So, and then you will start, oh, no, you don't understand. It's the technology that will determine the long-run success of our organization. So you will have a meeting after meeting after meeting, a brainstorm after brainstorm after brainstorm, and then you will lose time and you will lose effort and other organizational resources trying to coordinate on the course of action that would be beneficial to all of you. Now, a much easier solution in this case is simply to bundle the R&D and marketing tasks and give these tasks to a particular department or a working group within an organization and tell them, look guys, you're responsible for developing of this, of the next motorbike that we're going to offer to the market. And you're responsible for both the R&D activities and the marketing activities. Sure enough, there will still be disagreements between the different members of the department about which course of action to take, but also sure enough that these disagreements can be resolved much more successfully and much quicker if these people are within the same department. So that's one possibility that task specialization does not offer you, and the bundling of tasks does offer you. Now, if you really believe in task specialization, if you are Adam Smith, who believes in task specialization, then you could say, no, I don't buy your argument. I don't buy your argument. I want a specialization. But then you, as a strategic management consultant to these guys, you should say to them, okay, then it is you who has to make a decision which option the department should take, right? It is you who has to make this decision. And if it's you as a CEO who has to make this decision, it has some implications. It has some implications, and a couple of these implications I will mention right now. Implication number one, it will take some of your time to make this decision, right? In order to calculate the profitability of each option, you'd have to do research, you'd have to speak to consultants, you'd have to study some information. So deciding which option you want to take as a firm will take some time and effort that you as a CEO could have spent doing something else, some other super important activities like playing golf with your friends. That's one implication, and you don't necessarily want to deal with this. Now, the second implication is the implication with respect to decision rights, which is the material of the lecture last week. The lecture last week was about decision rights, how much decision rights to assign to each department. If you believe in specialization, you have to limit the decision rights assigned to the functional specialized departments in order to retain the right to make decisions about which course of action to take to yourself. And of course, we know that there are advantages and disadvantages of decision of the broad versus narrow decision rights allocation. There are advantages of delegation. There are disadvantages of delegation. Now, if delegation of tasks is important for your organization, you cannot delegate too much if you believe in specialization. That's another trade-off, right? If you believe in specialization, you have to spend more time coordinating the activities of different departments, and you have to delegate less decision rights to these departments, and that means hearing more back from these departments and having to spend more time doing basically their work. Now, if that's overwhelming for you, you may get back to the option of bundling the tasks together and empowering broadly constructed departments with lots of decision rights that would encompass both R&D and marketing activities. And that is, of course, a clear advantage of broad task assignment. You save a lot of time and effort on coordination activities. Okay, now let us move on. I also promised to talk a little bit about specialization and incentives. Here's a key paper in management by Bengt Holmström and Robert Milgram. Holmström is a recent Nobel Prize winner in economics, so these guys have got to say something important for economics. They have this very famous paper looking at the problem of multitasking, looking at the problem that I mentioned some time ago in this lecture. The problem of multitasking emerges when you have to divide your effort, you have to divide your time between different tasks. Now, if you divide your time between different tasks, the division of your time between different tasks is not random. The division of the time between your tasks depend on what you get as a result of these tasks, right? So if I get a lot of money from sales tasks, if my bonus depends on sales, I'll spend lots of time doing sales. If my bonus depends on customer service, I spend lots of time doing customer service. Okay? If my bonus depends 50% on sales, 50% on customer service, I will split my time along these lines. Not necessarily 50-50, but close to this. So the point is, if you have more than one task, right? If you have more than one task, you have to spend your time in proportion to the marginal return in terms of your incentive compensation for each of the tasks that you are charged with. Now, the problem that Holmström and Milgram really emphasize in this context, well, if your performance on the tasks is measured accurately, that's not a problem. You can devise incentives that will reflect the importance of each task for your organization, and this way achieve the optimal allocation of time between the tasks. The problem is that typically different tasks are measured with different degrees of precision. I can know exactly how much you've sold because this is the amount of money on my bank account at the end of the year. So these are your sales. I can precisely measure your performance in terms of sales. Your performance in terms of quality or your performance in terms of customer service, I can't measure that precisely. You know? Well, first of all, to measure quality is much harder than to measure sales. To measure customer service is also quite hard. You need to have all these evaluation forms, and some people will not fill them in, other people will fill them in. Then you'll have to deal with all sorts of noise and psychological biases in filling in the evaluation forms. So don't start me on this. Now, if you have tasks which lend themselves to measurement to different degree, if you can measure one task more precisely and the other task less precisely, this will create an incentive for the agent to concentrate their effort more on the task that is more precisely measured, because this is the surest way for them to get as much money or as much career progression as they possibly can. Because if the other task is not very precisely measured, it's rather like a lottery. If you can't affect, if the measure on this task is very, very noisy, if despite your best effort, your customer quality evaluations are not that large, or in another year you didn't do anything about customer quality, but you just had a different bunch of customers evaluating you and the evaluations are really great, you will take this into account and you'll say, okay, let customer service evaluations be like a lottery for me. I will concentrate on sales because this is the surest way for me to increase my payment. And if this problem appears, and this problem appears in many, many organizational settings, you're in trouble because the agents concentrating on the task, which is better measured and rewarded, creates an outcome that is not necessarily desirable for organizations. Right? People would emphasize sales and prioritize sales over customer service. It's one classical example of the problem of misallocation of effort. Now, the question, of course, is how can you devise an organizational architecture that will I wouldn't say solve this problem, but at least make this problem less important. At least, you know, minimize the damage caused by the misallocation of tasks. The organizational architecture solutions that speak to the problem of misallocation of tasks, they cluster around the idea of specialization. Because when you specialize and you are responsible for only one narrowly measured range of tasks, or ideally just one task, you cannot misallocate the effort. You cannot misallocate your effort to a large extent. If you have only one task to do, you will spend all your time on this task. If you have two tasks to do, you will split. But if you have 120 tasks to do, that's the problem of effort misallocation between the tasks is exacerbated. Now, if you think that this is too theoretical, consider the following two examples of the real problems of effort misallocation between tasks, which happen under broad task assignment. So the first problem I already sort of mentioned in various instances during the lecture: managers tend to prioritize sales over customer service. Another situation that is best understood within the framework of effort misallocation under broader task assignment is the phenomenon known as teaching to the test. You know, there is some evidence that school teachers, especially when they are incentivized — there have been experiments, not in Germany, but there have been experiments by offering teachers incentives based on the performance of their students on some sort of graduation tests, high school tests. What happens? The performance of students on high school tests increases because, and here's the most interesting part, the performance of students on the tests increases not because they learn more. It increases because teachers train them and organize the teaching activities in a way that is best compatible with their superior performance on the test. If the test is, let's say, multiple choice questions, right? You can reorganize your lesson in such a way as to train people to use logic and whatever knowledge they have to decide what the most likely correct answer is. Right? If the test consists of mathematical problems that have a particular solution, then you will teach students to solve mathematical problems that have a particular solution. Right? But there are other aspects to teaching, and there are other aspects to human capital, to the formation of human capital of students, that will remain unaddressed by teachers who are too much incentivized by incentives based on a very narrowly constructed and measured outcome, such as student test scores. So, what's the bottom line? The bottom line is, if you want to practice strong incentives, you have to specialize, with all the advantages and disadvantages that task specialization entails. Now, if you really believe in broad task assignment, if your technology and your environment and market dictate that you should really assign the tasks in a broad way and delegate a lot of decision rights to the departments, you should think twice about whether you want to offer strong incentives or not. The bad combination is strong incentives with broad task assignment, because this will cause effort misallocation between tasks. If you want to avoid this combination, you can either specialize or do not offer strong incentives and do broad task assignment. So think about why school teachers in Germany are not offered incentives based on the test performance of their students. Think about it. Just think about it as a sort of homework problem, and try to explain this in terms of the problem of effort misallocation under broad task assignment. Okay, now let's move on to discussing the manifestations of narrow versus broad task assignments in terms of the archetypical forms of organizational architecture that we encounter in our daily life. So, there are advantages and disadvantages of specialization, and the combination, these advantages and disadvantages, determine the organizational architecture dimension in terms of which tasks are allocated to which departments. So some departments may have broad task assignment, other departments may specialize. Now, if you're talking about specialization, you tend to bundle tasks, you tend to bring the different tasks together and assign them to a particular department by bundling these tasks by function. So you would have sales department, you would have marketing department, you have production department in your organization. Now, if you want, I don't know what this means. I'm sorry, but it was fine in my slides. This means I wrote specialization here. I don't know why it's in Greek. I really don't know. And this is broad task assignment. You can sort of see it a little bit. Assignment. Yeah. I really don't know what's going on. This is specialization, broad task assignment. I don't speak Greek, by the way, so it's I don't know why. Now, so you can have specialization, you have broad task assignment. And the organizational form that captures specialization is called U-form, or unitary form of organizational architecture. That's how the U-form looks like. This features, as you can see, the specialization of tasks by function. And this is a very narrow task assignment. So you have the top management, and you have the departments whose tasks are quite narrowly defined. So you have the department that deals with supply. So they liaise with different suppliers and make sure that the right ingredients are supplied to the right plants in your organization in the right time. That's all you do. You don't care about marketing, you don't care about R&D. Now, here's a department that deals with production. Here's a department that deals with sales. And these are the subunits, either specific persons or units within the department. This is very, very specialized U form of organizational architecture. And it has advantages and disadvantages, which are the same advantages and disadvantages as the advantages and disadvantages of specialization, because this is an organizational form that features specialization, right? Now, an alternative is the M form, or what's called multi-divisional organizational form, right? So look at this form of organizational architecture. You have the department 1, department 2, department 3, which are organized this time in terms of products or customer segments. So this is the business customers department, this is the private customers department, this is whatever else department, doesn't matter. This is the consumer products, this is the intermediate products, these are financial services, doesn't matter. What matters is that each of these organizational units has subunits which are grouped in terms of narrowly defined tasks that this particular department is responsible for. Now, it is a very important difference between M form and the U form. In the U form, the tasks, the particular activities, are concentrated in one department. And this department provides inputs to all the products and all the market segments that this organization operates. In the M form, these activities, the specific technological activities of the organization, are not concentrated in particular departments, they are spread over the entire firm. Instead, what is concentrated in specific departments is the focus on a particular product, customer, or market segment. This is the difference. Now, this form encapsulates broad task assignment with all the advantages and disadvantages of broad task assignment. Now, where do we go from here? Where do we go from here? We go from here by posing the following questions. So these are the two archetypical forms. There are some firms that are really organized either as a U form or as an M form. There are firms that are hybrids of the two. There are firms that have departments that feature broad task assignment, and the same firm has departments that feature narrow task assignment. So the hybrid form is also possible. Now, the question is, how do you choose the optimal degree of specialization versus broad task assignment? And what are the market forces that shape this optimal choice. In other words, why is it that the same organization has evolved from a U form, such as Deutsche Telekom, has evolved from a U form more into the M form with time, right? Why has this evolution taken place? This evolution has taken place because the market fundamentals that determine the extent of advantages and disadvantages of different organizational architecture forms have also evolved. Now, what are the key determinants of the choice of how much specialization versus how much broad task assignment you want to have? The fundamental factors are really two, right? So in textbook you can read a lot more, but it all at the end boils down to the following: economies of scale and coordination. Now, by economies of scale, we also mean a related point about the sharpness of incentives, right? So whatever makes you more efficient is an important consideration in the choice between specialization and broad task assignment. And if you believe in economies of scale, if economies of scale are considerable, and if you believe in strong incentives, you should really specialize. Because when you specialize, you can exploit economies of scale more successfully, and you can practice sharper incentives. If, however, the market is such that it's important to exchange information between different departments and coordinate between their activities, the better form, the better organizational form that can lead you to achieving this result is the M form, or broad task assignment. So remember the example I gave you illustrating the coordination problem and the solution to the coordination problem. So if you believe in specialization, you as a CEO have really to spend a lot of time coordinating. But if you have no time to spend on coordinating, you have to assign tasks more broadly and delegate more decision rights to the organizational units. So in the environment in which coordination and information exchange are very important, these environments favor broader task assignments more than they do narrow task assignments or specialization. So consider a market which is stable and there is no disruption, no innovation, no new technology. It's just a stable market. The technology is the same as 100 years ago. The market players are all the same. There is little market entry because barriers to entry are very high. This is the environment which is ideal for specialization, because in this environment, coordination is not that important, because you can write basically the technological protocols that would largely obviate the need to coordinate. If you are in a stable market and everything is the same as before, you can write a memo to all within your firm, and this memo would say, whatever marketing department thinks is the best thing to do, you have to listen to them. Right? So this comes from the experience that marketing is much more important than technology in this particular and very stable market. And this will largely avoid having to coordinate, because if everybody knows that it's the marketing that has the upper hand in decisions, then the R&D department will go for option two, and you don't need to worry about two Nash equilibria in the game. Right? If, however, you have a market that is not stable, if you have a market with lots of firm entry, with lots of technological development, with lots of new product constantly introduced to the market, right? Then the solutions that were optimal before are not necessarily the solutions that are going to be optimal right now. So you can't write a memo that you should always listen to the marketing department, because you should not always listen to marketing department. Sometimes the marketing is important. Other times, with new market players, new technologies, the R&D, the technology might be more important. So when you cannot regulate and do need to coordinate and do need to rely more on information exchange between different organizational units, broader task assignment is preferred. Now, so broader task assignment and M organizational form is preferred when markets are volatile and disruptive innovation happens all the time. Now, let's go back to the example of Deutsche Telekom. The telecoms market is actually going quite volatile, and the technology there is quite disruptive. The technological progress in IT is breathtaking, right? You have different solutions emerging in a matter of a few years, right? Radically different solutions. And in order to respond to this highly dynamic environment, you need a lot of coordination and a lot of information exchange between different departments, which is best achieved by broader task assignment. Therefore, the move, the organizational restructuring of Deutsche Telekom from more specialized to more integrated company is justified along these lines. Now, the last question I have to address in this lecture is the question of whether it's possible to come up with an organizational structure that would combine the strong parts of specialization and broad task assignment and would somehow dampen the weaknesses of specialization and broad task assignment. And it turns out that in theory, such organizational architecture does exist, right? And this is what's called matrix organizational architecture. The matrix organizational architecture, it's quite geometrically a combination, a superimposition of the two organizational structures, the U form and the M form. So look here, you have the departments that come from the U form, the functional, the narrow task assignment departments. You have the departments that come from the M form, the departments with broader task assignment. And the most interesting part is what happens here. These nodes are the subunits or people that are employed in specific departments and are assigned to projects within a certain area of specialization. So imagine you are a person who works in the supply department. So you're a person who works in the supply department and you're assigned to the to managing supply activities in market segment one, right? Another person, your colleague, also works in the supply department and is assigned to manage supply activities in market segment two, etc. So somebody in the production department, you don't know them because you don't work in the same department with them, but you work with them on the same project. You work with them on the same project. And there's also a colleague from the sales department, right? So this working on the same project, the opportunity to work on the same project, it goes a long way towards solving the coordination problem that these departments would have had in the absence of this matrix. You know, as long as people from different departments work on the same product, the information exchange and coordination are made all that much easier. Right? This is a very strong point of a matrix organization. It emphasizes the benefits of broader task assignment. Now, does it also benefit from the advantages of specialization? Yes, it does, because don't forget, these people are employees in the functional departments, so they don't need to be cross-trained in a lot of tasks, right? They can be quite sharply incentivized because their input is the input along the lines of narrowly defined tasks in the supply, production, or sales departments. So again, the advantages of specialization are largely preserved under matrix organizational form. Now, if the matrix organizational form is so wonderful, why do we even bother with U and M organizational form? Well, the matrix organizational form is wonderful. That's why a lot of firms actually practice it, right? It is wonderful. There's one problem with the matrix organizational form. And the problem is that there is considerable overlap in responsibilities and there could be also inconsistencies in decision rights assignment. Let me give you an example. So here you are, an employee from the supply department, and you have been commissioned. You have been sent to work on project one, whatever it is. And project one has the project manager, who is the boss of this department. You have your own boss, and you work with colleagues from the production and sales department. Question is, who should you listen to? Who should you listen to? Should you listen to the boss of Project One, or should you listen to the boss of your own department? This question does not have a clear solution, right? There's no right or wrong answer. Okay, I'm not going to have a multiple choice question based on this question: who you should listen to when you work in a matrix organization, because it is a problem. It is a problem. You may want to listen to your current project manager, but if you listen to your current project manager too much, right, your boss in the supply department may not like it very much, especially when all the departments have to share the same budget and when the time budgets in different departments are quite limited. Yeah, so you may actually want to listen to your current project manager a lot, because never mind what your boss is telling, in the long run you will continue to work in Project One and you don't care, because the Project One is going to pay much of your salary. On the other hand, you may say, okay, I am the employee in the supply department, and the supply department oversees supply activities across a wide range of products, but I still have to report to my boss, who does my performance evaluation and largely decides how much bonus I should get in this year. So if I'm asked to work for an extra month on Project One, and my boss from my department tells me, look, your next assignment is Project Three, because we feel like it, we need to manage our own resources, who will I listen to? I will listen to my boss. And that will create an inefficiency stemming from the overlap in responsibilities and the reporting channel communications. So a matrix organization form is great, provided the decision rights and responsibilities are clearly defined, not only in terms of tasks, but also in terms of who you should listen to first. Now, this is just a picture showing the historical developments of organizational forms. I told you that it all started with functional or U organizational form. Then it sort of emerged, it sort of evolved more towards divisional organization form, matrix, in the last 50 years. And now it's largely matrix, but a new type of organizational architecture called dynamic network is emerging. And it's so far so new that I will leave the analysis of it to more advanced course and use this moment to finish today's lecture, thanking you for your kind attention and wishing you all the best until next Thursday.